The Italian Wine Podcast is the community-driven platform for Italian wine geeks around the world. Support the show by donating at italianwinepodcast.com. Donate 5 or more euros and we'll send you a copy of our latest book, My Italian Grape Geek Journal, absolutely free. To get your free copy of My Italian Grape Geek Journal, click support us at italianwinepodcast.com or wherever you get your pods. Grazie mille.
Welcome to Masterclass U.S. Market with me, Giuliana Colangelo. This show has been designed to demystify the U.S. market for Italian wineries through interviews with experts in sales and distribution, social media, communications, and so much more. We will quiz each of our esteemed guests at the end of each episode to solidify the lessons that we've learned. So sharpen your pencils, get out your notebooks, and join us each week to learn more about the U.S. market.
Hello, welcome to Masterclass U.S. Wine Market. Today, I am thrilled to welcome Audrey Frick to the Italian Wine Podcast. Audrey is the senior editor and wine critic for Italy, Champagne, Sonoma, and Oregon for Jeb Dunnick. Before joining Jeb Dunnick, Audrey worked in the hospitality industry, both in Denver with Bobby Stuckey and his restaurants, and more recently in New York City. Welcome to the show, Audrey. It's great to have you here.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's great to talk with you.
Absolutely. And I hear you just got back from a trip to Italy. You were in Tuscany, correct?
You got it. I was in Montalcino.
Amazing. And then you're heading back there in a couple of weeks from what I hear?
Yep. So I'll be back in Italy. I'll be covering Piedmont for Barolo and Barbaresco.
Incredible. Amazing. Well, Audrey, before we dive into today's discussion about Jeb Dunnick and your work there, tell us a little bit more about your background and how you made that transition from restaurants, you know, into the role that you hold today with Jeb Dunnick.
I was a long time sommelier and restaurant professional, worked my way up through every position at Frasca in Boulder, Colorado with Bobby. So started actually in the operator office, answering the phones for Pizzeria and Frasca.
Wow.
And, you know, got promoted to the glass polishing station. This is after I had already completed my both bachelor and master's degrees in French horn performance. So this was already a second career for me.
French horn performance? That was your...
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I really wanted to be...
I didn't want to know that about you, Audrey.
Yeah, I really...
Every day.
I was very singular in my focus and my goal. I wanted to be in the New York Philharmonic or the Metropolitan Opera. So yeah, totally reasonable expectations as a kid.
Well, always high expectations for yourself, which is not a bad quality to have.
So I, you know, really kind of took that role on. I had found out about the Court of Master Sommeliers and really kind of dove headfirst into that. It wasn't necessarily a decision to leave music behind, but it quickly became apparent that that was my path. And to have someone like Bobby Stuckey and Carlin Carr, like, really there to mentor me along the way, it was incredible. And the whole team there was amazing. So, but I'm from New York and I always wanted to come back here. On top of working in restaurants, I worked in retail. I worked at the Boulder Wine Merchant and then ended up down here at Verve while we were waiting for One White Street to get open during the height of the pandemic. So I knew I was coming back to New York, moved back to New York to open a restaurant in Tribeca as the opening wine director, and got significantly delayed. And around that time, Jeb and I had known each other for about 10 years already. And like, really, I met him in my early days at Frasca. He needed someone to help him pour for large importer tastings that he would hold at his home in Boulder. And so I would come over, I would get my shift covered, I would pick up another shift at the restaurant, and I would do whatever it took to be there for him to do that. It was a great way for me to taste a tremendous amount of wine that I've learned since leaving the restaurant floor, that, you know, you really taste in a very narrow band as a sommelier. You know, you have a focus, right? You know, there's hopefully a focus with your wine list. And so you're tasting wines for, you know, the purpose of bringing them on and selling them to your guests. And so it was a really cool way for me to taste, you know, wines that maybe collectors like would be gravitating towards in Napa, you know, wherever, anywhere around the world, really. And so Jeb and I have known each other for a long time. I'd never had this as my ambition to do this side of the business. I was always scrambling just to open the wines and taste them. I couldn't believe he was writing full tasting notes on the wines. I could barely keep up. So it was just a really cool opportunity. And then fast forward, you know, 10 years or whatever, practically. I was here in New York and just helping out on the floor at Verve, you know, working for $20 an hour. It was actually the best thing that could have happened for me in that time, I think, but just because sanity wise, you know. Yeah, Jeb hit me up and said, hey, I need an Italian writer. And I laughed it off. I was like, that's hysterical. I've never written anything in my life. No. Finally, Bobby just said, don't be a hipstery New Yorker. Don't be a stupid Som. this is an incredible opportunity. You're going to do both of these things. You're going to open the restaurant and you're going to do this for Jeb. And I was like, yes, sir, Uncle Bobby. You know, to be honest, I didn't understand scoring wines. I didn't understand the role of a critic. I was really ignorant to what that really was, you know? And so I did a couple reports from home. Again, this was 2020. There was no travel. So everyone mailed their submissions. And we started just with for Brunello, for Montalcino, and Barolo and Barbaresco. And so I remembered really like just kind of being able to taste in that, the opportunity to taste in such a comprehensive way. It had never, and to spend, you know, it was completely, it took over my apartment. It still takes over my apartment, but it was an incredible way to taste things. And the opportunity wasn't lost on me, but the reality of opening a restaurant and doing this was not feasible at that time. And so I opened the restaurant, worked there for a year. And finally it was clear that this was a great opportunity. And also he changed the parameters from just Italy to having me cover champagne, which is one of my, if I ever say no to a glass of champagne, like something's wrong. So
doesn't sound like a bad beat to cover. Yeah, that would definitely, I'd want that on my list. I know that for sure.
And Sonoma and Oregon. And so it's an incredible scope and it definitely poses its own challenges, but I'm so happy that I have Jeb as my person to guide me through it. And there's no better person to do that with. So,
yeah, well, it sounds like a really interesting trajectory and an exciting place to have landed working now with Jeb. And, you know, today in this episode, Audrey, I want to talk to you a little more about Jeb Dunnick and give all the listeners of the Italian Wine Podcast more information about him and the publication, and as well as the work you're doing specifically with the Italian wine category. So, you know, the three key takeaways and what we want to focus on are, number one, some background on Jeb Dunnick and the publication and how Jeb fits into the world of wine critic. Number two, what makes Jeb Dunnick and the publication different from other critics? And then finally, what your approach has been to scoring Italy for Jeb. And I'd love to hear that you're spending so much time in the region, which is always important. So for starters, just give us the background on Jeb Dunnick and the publication.
Yeah, so Jeb, you know, he actually was another one that wasn't trained as a sommelier. He was an aerospace engineer. So he was at Ball Aerospace and he had the Rhone report. He did his own online publication in his spare time, staying up in the middle of the night.
Wow.
Reviewing wines of the Rhone. And he got Robert Parker's attention and Bob convinced him to come over and work with him at The Advocate. And so he did that for quite a number of years, I believe about 7 years he was with them, and then decided to start his own publication. And initially he thought it was just gonna, he didn't know how many subscribers he would have. And he went back to work at Ball Aerospace. And I remember getting a call being like, hey, Audrey, could you come do a tasting with me at the house? And I was like, of course, absolutely. And then, yeah, I think he spent about a week back at Ball Aerospace. And when he put it up, he had enough subscribers to make it self-sustainable. So pretty unusual and special. So Jeb covers Napa, he covers Washington, he covers Bordeaux, and of course, the Rhone. And the only region I took over for him was Sonoma. He did cover Sonoma before that, but all the rest, Italy was a new one, an addition to the site. So it's just the two of us, to be honest. So I think that sort of sets us apart. We're very small. We're a lean and mean team. We have a fantastic editor. Thank God for her. Annette is my savior. And yeah, so we're just a very lean, mean fighting machine here.
So just the two of you. Wow. And you're covering quite a lot and tasting so many different wines as well. And, you know, you mentioned that that's one of the key differentiators for Jeb Dunnick from the other major wine publications. But how else would you say that the content and what you're doing with Jeb Dunnick maybe stands out from some of the other wine critics and wine publications?
Yeah, so we're entirely subscription funded. That is, I think, the number one thing that really, we are completely independent. We do not accept any advertisements, gifts, etc. So it's really just reliant on subscriber base. So we really feel that that gives us the freedom to be really honest and whatever that means for us, and to really approach criticism without having any external pressures.
Right. That's a key distinction, and definitely something that I can see being really important when it comes to the review of wines, like having that independent voice and that independent authority. And for your subscribers that, like, as you said, Audrey, are what funds the publication, right? And keeps the lights on. What feedback are you hearing from them when it comes to the content that you're putting out there? Like, what are they gravitating towards these days?
Italian Wine Podcast, part of the Mama Jumbo Shrimp family.
You know, that's a really good question. I don't hear a lot of negative feedback. Yeah. I think, you know, I mean, we live in such a world that's so saturated with immediate social media feedback and all that stuff. So I try not to go too much into the deep worlds of like the wine berserkers and such. I made a mistake doing that one time and found like a terrible review that I did. And it was like, it just got eaten alive. And I was like, okay, I cannot, maybe this is not how my midnights and 1 a.m. should be spent. But in all seriousness, I think a lot of the readership writes back. I love when we get, you know, emails back from our subscribership, and just, you know, frankly, I love it when they, you know, I took over new regions first, so Italy is new, and I'm very lucky with my Italian regions for the most part. I have a lot of support from the consortios to make calls out for submissions. But, you know, there are other regions where it's like I've really had to go door to door and knock on each and individual producer. And we try to be as equal and fair to everyone. But, you know, it's getting the word out is initially hard sometimes. But in Italy, I'm very fortunate. You know, the consortios do a wonderful job to get that word out and collect submissions for us to taste and for me to taste at the consortio in Italy. But, you know, it's like I remember my first Oregon report. Nobody knew who Jeb Dunnick was in Oregon. Nobody cared. I remember, like, you know, one person brought me a couple bottles of wine that were like something that Robert Parker had dogged on back in the 90s. And I was like, you do know that I'm not Robert Parker, right? Yeah. So you have to kind of like, you know, you have to meet people where they are. And that goes kind of both ways for producers as well. And so just having an open mind and really trying to get the word out. And that's been some of the initial things. But again, it's like, you know, now that people kind of know, it's like the word gets out. And then, you know, one of our subscribers reach out and be like, hey, where are all these producers? And listed off like 20, like people that, like, you think I don't know who these producers are? Of course I wanted them to submit their wines. Like, I totally get you, man. Like, I would kill to have them in there. But then it's like, you know, a year later, and I can write back to that person and be like, hey, look, man, I did the best I could for this one. I hope you see where we're going with this. It's not just a one and done thing, right? The idea is that you build up a following over time.
Totally. And the more the word gets out, the broader it'll spread, and that you'll get the attention and awareness among, you know, new producers. So knowing that Italy, you know, you started the coverage of that category for Jeb, talk to us a little bit about how you're approaching the Italian wine category. And you mentioned working closely with the consortia to organize tastings, which is great. But talk to us just a little bit more about your approach, let's say, when you go to the country and taste, as well as what you're doing, you know, when you're tasting here back home in New York.
Well, I think Italy is such an amazing region to cover because, first and foremost, I think there's a tremendous amount of value across almost all categories. Yes, I cover Italy broadly, and I'm going to work to do smaller articles on lesser known regions in the future. That's actually something that I think is going to be more and more important as we kind of are navigating this still kind of new climate for wine purchasing. So for example, like, you know, I cover Montalcino annually, I cover Barolo and Barbaresco. That was all I was initially like really committed to doing annually, but I added Bulgari and I added Chianti Classico to that, because I think both of those, I think both for our readership at Jeb Dunnick, I think like Bulgari is an incredibly important region for people to understand my palate, coming from, you know, for Napa drinkers, for anyone really that reads Jeb and knows his style. So I think it's important to make a differentiation in how we kind of talk about very like same, same, different, right? And then I think Chianti Classico is one of the most important regions right now, because I do think there's tremendous value. I think they're really, whether or not anyone understands the subdivisions is a whole other story. But I do think that the level of attention that gets brought to that is really important, and it's worth shining a light on. Of course, the Barolo and the Barbarescos of the world, like, I love them. They're iconic on noble wines, and I think those are always going to be collectible things, and as they should, but I do think there's a tremendous amount of value there still.
Yeah, Chianti definitely, and Chianti Classico specifically, has had a lot of energy and excitement, and I know there's a big event for the 100th anniversary happening in April in New York, and they'll be pulling out some really old wines too, and it's going to be cool to taste too back to the wines from the 60s and really look at the evolution of that category too in that region. So how can Italian wineries work with you and Jeb Dunnick and the publication? We get that question a lot. Just how do I submit my wines? How do I get in touch with you? And I don't want you to get bombarded with 1,000 emails following the podcast, but maybe just share a little bit about the logistics of how you work with wineries in order to get their wines reviewed.
Absolutely. So first and foremost, we have an editorial calendar, which is posted on our site. So you don't need a subscription to view that. So the editorial calendar is there, and that's for both myself or Jeb. If anybody has any questions, they can reach out to our support email, and if there's any further information that they need. But again, we really are trying to treat everyone the same. So as long as we have, whether or not we can make the individual time to visit in person, but we do accept mailed submissions. I accept mailed submissions at least. And then of course, through the organizations that collect submissions, whether it's Sonoma County Vintners or, you know, obviously there are people that aren't within those organizations. And I would just say, reach out to support@jebdunnick.com, and then they will get myself and or Jeb involved. So.
Okay. Amazing. So support@jebdunnick.com. All right. So that's the contact. Perfect to get in touch with you and Jeb and get the process started. And talk to us a little bit about timing. You know, I think that's always critical for wineries is, okay, if I submit my wine today, February 23rd, when will I see a score? So talk to us a little bit about, you know, timelines with Jeb Dunnick when you are publishing scores.
Well, there again, we are on our own deadlines as well. So we're doing our best. I've been doing this almost 2 years now, but I still consider myself very new to this. So my goal is to get much better about turning those around in a more timely way. So that is a personal, we're getting very personal here. But, you know, that being said, it's again, we have our deadlines that are posted on the editorial calendar. And so as long as it's within those guidelines, and again, if our support team can answer anything, that's the best way. But I have people all around the country trying to get me to put things out. And it's, again, I'm trying my best to get things out when they come about, but I'm sorry if that's not really a great answer, but I get back, we have a demanding travel schedule. So basically when I get home, I start editing, and it takes a couple weeks, 2 to 3 weeks to get that turned around to my editor, depending on if she's got things from Jeb or myself, then it's, you know, then goes to her. And so again, we're trying to hit our editorial calendar, and then everything else can kind of get fed in through that.
Got it.
When and if we can.
Okay.
My whole goal is to get more.
Yes.
More out.
More quickly. But hey, there's only two of you, like you said. So that's important for our listeners, I think, to remember as well. So,
yeah.
But it sounds like y'all are open to communication and just answering any questions that come up, which is great to hear. So what's on the horizon next? Audrey, tell us a little bit more. You have a trip to Piedmont coming up, but what else is coming up for you this year with Jeb Dunnick?
Yeah, so like I said, I just finished Montalcino. I will be moving over to Barolo and Barbaresco. So I'll be based in Alba for most of that, and Lamora for a couple weeks. And then I'll move over to Sonoma, which is a lot of wine.
Yeah.
Never would have imagined. I mean, I know it's a big region, but they're very enthusiastic. And honestly, the wines there are something that really surprised me. I think the quality of wines coming out of Sonoma right now are just really tremendous. And then I'll move into Oregon, and then Champagne, and then back to Italy. And then sort of basically my Italian life begins in about October. every year for now, maybe a little earlier this year. We'll see. But yeah, I'm just working to adjust and stay on top of the when things are released and try to get it out to our readership, because that's ultimately the goal.
Totally.
The consumer is what we're after. So to help them.
Exactly. Reach consumers, get them information about our wines, and ultimately drink and sell more wine, right? That's what we're all here to do in this industry in one way or another.
For sure.
Yeah. Anything else you want to tell us about, you know, Italy or anything you're specifically, you know, you mentioned Chianti Classico, but anything else that you're particularly excited about or that you're really excited to taste this coming year? Anything else in Italy wise?
Yeah. So I think, you know, I kind of touched on it without being too specific, but I think, you know, something I'm paying, this was true on the restaurant floor too. I think the more I reflect on that time and what I do now is really like thinking about where are those values. And like, you know, I mean, it's like coming up on spring. I was just like, what do I want to drink? I'm already craving Rosé. You know, are there oceans of Rosé? No, but, you know, but I think drawing light to where these really fun, approachable wines that aren't going to break your bank, that you just want to enjoy on a Tuesday night or an afternoon in a park, you know? So I think Italy, there's a lot there. I am going to try to cover Sicily at some point as well for Etna. I'm always excited by those wines, and I'm obsessed with Caraconte right now. If I could drink that every day, I'd be pretty happy. I think doing more smaller regions, smaller reports on focused things that, you know, not necessarily the big collector stuff. I do think the role of the wine critic is going to be more important. As you know, frankly, I hope there are a million sommeliers out there that can make up their own minds and like don't feel like they need us. That's great. But I do think we hold a space now here that maybe is a little different than it once was. Or I think there's a lot to offer
in terms of guiding consumers, in terms of bringing awareness to new wines, or like you mentioned, you know, exposing your readers to maybe some lesser known regions and lesser known varietals. I mean, I think that's a great point, Audrey, because, you know, we know that things have changed drastically in the on-premise and restaurants here in the U.S. There's not as many full-time sommeliers as there once was. And a lot of restaurants are cutting back on staffing, leaner programs when it comes to, you know, their full-time wine stewards or sommeliers. So that's a really great point that, you know, the voices like Jeb Janik and yours are really important to shedding light on lesser known regions and producers that might have previously been introduced to the consumer by a sommelier.
Yeah. I mean, I hope, again, I believe in the sommelier world. I come from what I think is a great lineage and people who are really banging the drum and doing great works, like, and that are going to continue to do that and grow the profession. But, you know, as a whole, like, it's, I hope, I'm hopeful, but I also think there's a realistic approach. And I know when I go out to eat, a lot of times there's not many people there that I'm always open to talking to a sommelier. I always want to talk. I want to hear what other people. I know what I'm excited about. Like, but
yeah,
you know, I love opening up a wine list and finding something new and being like, hey man, I don't know this. Like, you're excited about it. Let's go for it. Like, I don't know. I love restaurants. I love eating out. So I always love hearing other people's opinions. And same with consumers. I just want to hear what my friends want to drink and, you know, whether or not they're in the wine industry or not. It's like, hey man, what are you excited about? You know, so I think opening that conversation is great.
Yeah,
always.
Absolutely. Well, Audrey, as we are winding down on today's episode, we'll do our rapid fire quiz we do at the end of every episode on Masterclass US Wine Market. And if you can do your best to answer these questions in one or two sentences, just to really help our listeners better learn and understand the US market. So question number one, what is your number one tip for mastering the US wine market?
Meet people where they are. Listen to what people are asking for and tailor your expertise to that.
Absolutely. Great advice. Number two, what is something you might have told your younger professional self about selling and now writing about wine in the US?
I think I would have told my younger self not to be in a rush.
Okay.
To get there, you know, just in general. Again, it comes down to listening to both your mentors, your peers, your guests. But I think just listen. You don't necessarily need to be the loudest voice in the room to be heard.
Yeah, I like that advice a lot. And finally, number three, you're traveling back and forth to Italy a lot, Sonoma, all over. What is your number one travel hack?
Oh my gosh. First of all, I have a few, but I believe in carrying what I need with me. So I completely differ from a lot of people on this. I'd always check a bag. If it gets lost, I know I'm jinxing myself here and it's going to happen now, but okay. I've never lost it. But like, just like, you know, basic stuff like my toothpaste, my Italy is not like if you have hair. Sorry, I know, speaking to all of our audience out there, you know, as someone with hair, you know, that's fragile, like I'm like, I want some shampoo. It's not like your all purpose, like bath, all things, you know what I mean?
Yep. I get that. Yep. Some real shampoo.
And then sleep. I just prioritize sleep. It's my number one MO. So I really try to like, just even if I'm not down for the count, like at 10 p.m. or whatever, but I really try to be like wound down as much as I can.
Yeah.
And just finding a way so that in the morning it's fresh and vibrant and let the wines speak for themselves. And, you know, hopefully they're amazing and like, and they can speak to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Sleep. That's a really, really good one. I love that tip, Audrey. So sharing. Well, Audrey, it's so great to have you on the show today. How can our listeners follow along with your travels and everything that you're doing?
Well, of course, jemdunnick.com. I am on most social medias. I'm most active probably on Instagram and then by proxy Facebook, but it's just, I think it's just my name. I think it's just Audrey_Frick on there. And then, yeah, again, I have accounts on every platform probably, but I don't know. I can't promise I'm super active on them. I'm trying to be better.
Yeah. You've got a lot to do. We get it. And you can't keep up with every social media platform. You got to, I feel like you're going to focus in on the ones you're active on and make it work. So awesome. Well, thank you so much again, Audrey. It's so great to have you here today.
Likewise. Thank you. It was so nice to speak with you. Can't wait to catch up in person.
Same here.
Thank you for joining me today. Stay tuned each week for new episodes of Masterclass US Wine Market with me, Juliana Colangelo. And remember, if you enjoyed today's show, hit the like and follow buttons wherever you get your podcasts.